Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is January 6th and a great conversation this morning. It's starting to feel in the studio a little bit like a morning television show, and you'll understand why in just a little bit. Our friends from Lutheran Senior Services joining me in studio this morning, talking about an upcoming event, which I think many of our older adults will certainly enjoy, and people of all ages may appreciate as well. We're going to talk about wine and the word and a speaking event coming up very soon called Aging Like a Fine Wine. We'll talk with the author of that book, Wine and the Word, Dr. Kurt Senske, in a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo there, and you can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin. You get a chance, drop them a line, say thanks for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. Joining me in studio this morning, Kathy Bell. She's the Lutheran Senior Services Creative Director. Kathy, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thanks, Andy. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you in studio this morning. So we have our very own Kathy in studio, and our Kathy Lee and our Hoda this morning. We have Sue Dressel here, Lutheran Senior Services Director of Events and Donor Relations. Sue, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. We are so happy to be here. And yes, we do have our glass of wine sitting handy. Not really.
I know we were joking before the program that I should have brought in a nice Riesling this morning as we were talking about wine and the word and this the upcoming a speaking event, the speaker series, Aging Like a Fine Wine. Tell me about the speaker series. Why a speaker series?
Well, first of all, it's important for us at Lutheran Senior Services to not only get the word out about who we are and what we do, but also to connect with our churches. Mm-hmm. They are a big part of why we are as successful as we are, and it's important for us to engage with them, provide very important information, whether it's on a spiritual basis or whether it's on a senior living basis, that kind of. So we thought this was a good way to be mm-hmm. able to do that and get out in the churches and do that.
Very good. What are some of the other topics now? We're talking about aging like a fine wine with Dr. Kurt Senske here in a little bit. What are some of the other things that you've covered in the past or will be covering in the speaker series?
Well, they'll be, those are currently being worked on as we speak, but we're looking at things that we know would affect our seniors. So mm-hmm. that can be maybe medical health care. We certainly know there's a lot of changes that are going on with that. We know the financial aspect of retiring. Those kinds of things are mm-hmm. very important, too. So those are the topics that we are looking at and honing in on who our speakers will be, where they will be at, and certainly get the word out once they are put
sure.
in place.
You know, I'm so glad that we get to talk with Dr. Senske today on the book that and the topic that he'll be presenting on in the speaker series here just a little bit. As I'm thinking back about the audience for this the speaker series or for this event, it reminds me of my days as a camp program staff and hosting retreats. And I did a lot of youth retreats and things like that. But one of the privileges I had at a camp where I served was hosting the Golden Agers retreat. Mm. And that was so fun. It was a retreat for seniors. And one of the things we did was a winery tour. And it was so fun. You know, you can't do that with youth.
No. Right. No.
We just had,
exactly right.
We had so much fun going to see how wine was made and just see that whole process and see the vineyard. So I'm looking forward to talking with Dr. Senske about that a little bit today too.
Yeah, and I think that's what we saw, just like what mm-hmm. you were talking about. This is a perfect opportunity to mix that message. And Dr. Senske's book is the great avenue mm-hmm. to be able to do that. Aging Like Fine Wine is something that, and I've even had a couple of phone calls of people saying, this topic just seems very relevant, especially for my time in my life.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Kathy, tell me a little bit about your work at Lutheran Senior Services.
I get to have all the fun. I always tell people that I put pictures and words together and make them look good. But I have an unbelievably talented team of 5 and 6 people that help me do that. So we do all the social media, mm-hmm. our web, all of our print. We plan and do strategic marketing plans, communication plans, and we support our whole organization.
And they do an amazing job, too.
Thank you.
Well, let's go to the phones now. And Dr. Kurt Senske, he's the president and CEO of Upbring, the new Lutheran Social Services of the South. Dr. Senske, welcome to Faith and Family.
Andy, it's great to be here. Allow me to tell a quick Kathy Lee story. So I out of the blue, I get this note from her saying that she had received a copy for Christmas of Wine and the Word from a friend of hers and how much she absolutely loved the book. So now Kathy Lee and I are Twitter friends, Facebook friends. I still haven't gotten invited on her TV show yet, but we're working on it.
We should have invited her this morning.
So there we go.
Well, maybe you can get us all on.
Well, how nice is that? See, you made it big time now, right?
There we go.
On
now,
Faith and Family.
She's obviously a wine lover and a lover, more importantly, of the Bible and the Word. So
for her, it was
a great combination.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Senske, tell us a little bit about your background as a Christian servant leader and now with Upbring, Lutheran Social Services of the South.
Yeah, so I actually grew up in St. Louis. We moved when I was 10. My dad worked for the Lutheran Church, and so I'm a Webster Gardens graduate before they became Christ Community. I'm a Lutheran High School South graduate. My parents still live in Crestwood, and in fact, I think they are on the waiting list at Lutheran Senior Services, so all sorts of great connections to this program today. You know, made the mistake of taking a baseball scholarship at Concordia University in Texas. And once you come to Texas and you meet a woman who's a Texan, you tend not to leave. And so I've been here for now about 25 years and worked with Upbring, which we changed the brand about a year ago from Lutheran Social Services of the South as we changed our mission, or maybe a better way to say it is enhanced our mission or focused our mission on breaking the cycle of child abuse. So it's an invitation for everybody of all Christian faith to come together and work at breaking the cycle of child abuse here at Upbring. We're actually the largest provider of children's services here in the state of Texas and serve about 40,000 individuals each and every year. So it's truly been a blessing to work and to have that be part of my ministry. In my spare time, I also serve on the board of directors of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in St. Louis, so get back quite often. Mm-hmm. And have also had the opportunity in the past to work with Lutheran Senior Services and just have such great respect for the ministry that they do as well.
Yeah, LSS, they do some great things here in the Midwest, across Missouri and Illinois, doing some great work here. And part of that is the speaker series. So so glad to hear that you're a speaker for the next event coming up very soon. That's coming up. Kathy, when is or Sue, when is that coming up next?
That's actually a week from tomorrow, Thursday, January 14th, and it's going to take place at Concordia Lutheran Church on Kirkwood Road, and it's from 6 to 8:30.
Very good, and we'll give details on how to find out more about that event throughout the program as well. Now, Kurt, your book, Wine and the Word, Savor and Serve, is kind of the foundation of the conversation I think it sounds like you'll be having in this presentation. Right. What prompted you to consider wine as a metaphor for the Christian life?
Yeah, it's a great question. As some of you may be aware, you know, one of my previous books was called The Calling, Live a Life of Significance. And I was in the process of writing that book one weekend, and I really got frustrated with it. I didn't think I'd be able to finish it. And so maybe as a way to allow my creative juices to get flowing again, I decided to substitute wine. And so I crafted this outline of the relationship between wine and the Bible and what it means to live a well-lived life. And it was actually a fun experiment to do that weekend. I then put it aside, finished The Calling. But after The Calling came out, I went back to that. I said, is there something there? Is there something from the Bible and all of the different stories about wine? I think wine or the vineyard is mentioned a total of 521 times in the Old and New Testament. And, you know, from my perspective, as I looked at this and studied it in detail, the inspired scribes of the Bible, who were artists in their own right, used it as a metaphor for, you know, almost every situation we face in life. So love and death and suffering and eternal life and damnation. And it just seemed to be an appropriate metaphor for me as I wanted to write and share my experiences, both in my own life with the wine, with the Bible, to maybe give some instruction to others about what it means to live this Christ-filled life, and as I like to say, where we become intoxicated with the gospel.
Now, I thought you were going to say, when writing that previous book and you got writer's block, you kind of got distracted or kind of got stuck. You stopped and you opened a bottle of Merlot.
Well, that was probably part of it.
And that's what prompted the metaphor.
Yeah, absolutely. It was probably the most fun book I've ever written. My wife gets all the credit for the photographs in the book, and she kept encouraging us to take more trips to wine areas of the country and other places. And so it was probably the most expensive book I've ever written, but I'm sure I had a great time doing it.
You had a lot of research to do for this book.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, research is important, Andy.
I enjoyed the stories that you shared in your book, and looking forward to sharing some of them. I don't want to share all of them today, because I certainly want to encourage folks to come to the speaking engagement coming up next week. But as you use wine as a metaphor, as you made this, as you said, it was kind of a creative outlet to you know, make a change of pace from the other book that you were working on in comparing wine. What were some things that you learned along the way about wine? Before we get into a lot of the details, were there some overarching themes regarding this comparison of wine to the Christian life?
You know, yes. So how I look at it is maybe on several levels. One is just the wisdom that the Bible provides us when it uses wine, both directly and as a metaphor. So, you know, obviously the Bible talks about the evil effects of drinking too much wine, mm-hmm. right? It leads to violence, it mocks a man, it makes a man poor, bites like a serpent, etc. But then it also, you know, it was also a symbol of prosperity. And, you know, the famous story where Paul tells Timothy to take a little wine, it'll be good for his stomach. Mm-hmm. And so what was interesting to me about how the writers and the scribes of the books of the Bible used wine is, you know, when you think about it, back in both the Old and the New Testament days, wine was a staple of everyday life. And, sure. and oftentimes they couldn't trust the water. And so they used wine, whether you're young or old. And mm-hmm. so it didn't matter if you're rich or poor. It was something that everybody could relate to. And then, you know, as you think about wine and all of the different people who absolutely love wine and probably go way too far and taking this as a hobby. You think, for example, about one of the ways a wine expert looks at a bottle of wine or a glass of wine is to say, what is its complexity? Mm. And, you know, that's that trait that compels you to always return for that next taste. And each time you take that taste, you discover something new. And, you know, I also think there's an analogy that we can use, for example, with respect to God's Word. And when you think about how you taste a fine wine, right, you look at it, the depth of its color, you'll smell the cork, you'll carefully pour it, you'll swirl it around, you'll take that deep whiff. And, you know, what if we would do the same thing in terms of studying God's Word and to truly drink deeply maybe of His wisdom, of the commands, of the promises, as we're called to live counterculturally in this world? And I think, you know, that, for example, as I talk about in the book, that's one strategy for us that we can learn from the wine world in terms of our own Christian life, as we drink deeply of the wisdom of God and the Word in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, in my previous life, one time in between full-time careers, when my wife and I married, I had a little time to do some part-time work, and I was waiting tables. You know, everybody has that chapter in life where you wait tables for a little while. And part of that involved taking a wine class, so I knew what I was talking about when I was serving the customers and you know, knowing how to recommend a pairing and things like that. So I had the privilege of taking a wine class in the same shopping center where the restaurant was, and I learned a lot of those things that you were just mentioning, how to smell and what to pay attention for in the aroma and that sort of thing. I never knew there was so much complexity to wine. It really was quite fascinating. And even more so later on, I took a college class when I decided to go back to school for the 10th time, taking a college class and learning about the history of wine. And it really is quite fascinating. And wine and other things have a lot of history in the scriptures, which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, there's a science to the wine. There's a geographic element. And, you know, as the French talk about the terroir, the location, its history, mm-hmm. the soil, and all of that going into the wine. And, you know, what I love about wine is it truly can engage your senses. You know, it's cerebral, it's sensuous, it's sacred, it's secular, it's both historic, it can be modern, and it can be civilized, it can be edgy. And so there's just a complexity about its topic, mm-hmm. much like I think some of the foodies would say. You can talk about food in that sense as well. I understand your past completely. The older people in your audience will appreciate the fact that I worked my way in college at places like Grant's Farm or Grant's Cabin and the Flaming Pit.
I've been there.
Business, so.
Boy, that takes me back to the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely,
and
70s even.
Yeah, wow. Well, so you had the privilege of being a server too, and probably serving wine along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I'm not sure the Flaming Pit gave us any courses.
What you mentioned earlier, doing some research to prepare for this book. Tell me about some of the vineyards, maybe some of the vintners you met along the way, and what you learned from them as you visited, as you visited vineyards and wineries.
Yeah, and you know, so maybe one of the more interesting lessons that we've learned is, you know, how in some ways the vine, by being pruned and, quote, having to suffer, allows it to become stronger and healthier and to grow better breaks, right? And so, you know, it's a reminder of the verse in, I think it's John 15, where I am the vine and you are mm-hmm. the branches. And, you know, if you abide in me, you know, if you wish, everything will be done for you. But, you know, what grabbed my attention with that and the conversations we've had with some of the vineyard owners, Cindy Steinbeck is one example, is, you know, it reminded me of what Martin Luther talks about in terms of the purpose of suffering. And, you know, I think there, as Martin Luther talks about, there are two times in our life when we come closest to knowing God, right? And one's when we suffer personally. None of us like to do it, but we can all understand that as Christians. And then two, when we focus on the suffering of Jesus. And, you know, it's through the adversity and to not water the vines as often as you might want to think you should do and to prune them back at the appropriate times and to prune the grapes so that not too many grow on a cluster, so that actually then improves the ultimate outcome of a wine. And I think there's just some lessons from mm-hmm. that we can learn from that. You know, I think the other thing that Laurie and I just truly appreciate of being in various different vineyards is, you know, just the artistic creation of God and the beauty of His creation. And, you know, how a simple piece of plot of land can grow such a miraculous vine and grape. And then through human hands and through our vocation, through our calling, we then get to make this into a bottle of wine to be enjoyed by all. Yeah, so lots of different lessons, I think, when you take the time and relax and put the cell phones down and just truly... Mm-hmm. be at one in someone's vineyard.
Sure, it can be a vineyard can be a very peaceful place, unless of course it's harvest time.
Yeah,
it can be a very peaceful and beautiful place, mm-hmm. lots of green and quiet. Certainly, a place to enjoy company, to enjoy conversation, the art of conversation with one another.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that reminds me of a great quote, and I'm not sure who said it a long time ago, but for those of us who've gone to our synod conventions or church body conventions, I think we can appreciate this. One barrel of wine can make can work more miracles than a church full of saints. And, you know, so it's that understanding that as you take time to share a glass of wine with a spouse or a friend or colleagues, it is a time to just maybe take a step back and appreciate all of the blessings that we've been given, and to reconnect and to maybe just slow down a little bit to be reminded of all of the different blessings that God has given us.
Where did your travels take you? Where did you visit vineyards and wineries?
Yeah, so probably I'll share with you several of our favorite places, but Napa, of course. Mm-hmm. If some people call that Disney World for adults, and there's some truth to that. But probably our more interesting places were, you know, for example, the Tuscany region, south of Florence in Italy, and in the Beaune area outside of Paris, where they grow the amazing Burgundy wines, and the Bordeaux areas as well, and the Provence areas, because, you know, everybody loves southern France, and then you get to try the various different rosés. You know, those were probably our favorite spots. We've, you know, also through the various different trips that I've taken on for my job, and Lori's been able to go along and some of the speaking engagements, you know, what's really interesting, I think, about the United States is all of the different amazing areas that grow really good wine. So, mm-hmm. obviously, Missouri, right?
And, absolutely.
And mm-hmm. your Norton grapes, and in the Herman, Missouri area, especially, and upstate New York, the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, even North Carolina a little bit, and even Texas, up in the Lubbock and the Panhandle area, is an amazing place to grow certain types of grapes.
Hmm. You're right. Missouri has some it's a beautiful part of the state. Mm-hmm. To drive through the hills around 94, mm-hmm. and out in that area, Herman and Augusta, Defiance, beautiful part of the state. And it is a fun place just to relax and sit and enjoy conversation. I'm not a big fan of wine, but I love the winery experience. I love to sit and enjoy the time at the winery and just relax. I'm more of I'm more of the fruit wines than the grape wines, but I shouldn't admit that on a show about wine in the Word, should I?
No, but, you know, in Missouri actually grows some really good sweet wine.
Yeah.
You and my mother have that in common. She loves that sweet red wine from Missouri, and it's good. It's an acquired taste.
Blackberry is blackberry wine. Yeah.
Interesting.
From St. James, Missouri. Yeah.
I had a donor one time who made homemade pear wine, and she gave some to me, and I have to admit that was not my favorite. So stay away from the pear wine.
Well, it's totally different than wine made from grapes. Absolutely. Any fruit wine is totally different. And so if you're expecting a wine that tastes like wine made from grapes, then it's just a totally different experience. So you certainly have found some places and great memories from wineries, especially those times visiting with your wife or with good friends and or new people that you've met along the way, it sounds like.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the most, you know, some people describe wine with the various different descriptors, right? So mm-hmm. it could be coconutty or smell like a cigar box, et cetera. But, you know, I guess my preference would be I remember wines and I taste wines in some ways based on the location where we were at. So mm-hmm. remembering drinking that rosé wine at a cafe in Paris or, you know, in a cave outside of Beaune where three generations of Senski. So my parents and my daughter and my wife and I were all just sharing a bottle of wine and having a great meal of French food. And, you know, it doesn't get any better than that, and it was an absolute, a fantastic opportunity for, you know, family members who live in different parts of the country to reconnect and to slow down and to just enjoy each other. And if that to me was a special time, and I'll always remember that bottle of wine because of that moment.
Yeah, lots of good memories associated with those times of slowing down and relaxing and enjoying good conversation.
Yeah,
well, we need to go to a break. Before we go to break, I want to share the details about the upcoming event, Aging Like a Fine Wine. Do you want to share those with us?
Absolutely. So again, it's a week from tomorrow. So it's Thursday, January 14th, and it's taking place at Concordia Lutheran Church. We have their big area upstairs, obviously the church, and then the reception area. Mm-hmm. off the church. It's from 6 to 8:30 p.m. in the evening. It is free, and this does include Dr. Senske's book. Everyone who attends will receive a copy of his book. Obviously, he's going to be there, so hopefully we can get him to sign a few books as well, maybe with a glass of wine while he's signing them. And then afterwards, we are going to have a wine and cheese reception for people to enjoy and actually partake in some wine afterwards.
Very good. What time do we need to register
it's
permission?
A free event, mm-hmm. So we're not necessarily saying that you have to. However, we want to make certain we have enough wine and
sure.
cheese and books and everything on hand. So to register, you can do it a couple of ways. You can either contact me at my phone number, and that is 314-262-8217 to register, or we have an online registration website, and that is www.engaginginlife, just like it sounds, .eventbrite.com, and that will take you right to the place where you need to register, and it's very simple to do.
Very good. Very good. Well, let's go to a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Kurt Senske, President and CEO of Upbring Lutheran Social Services of the South, about wine and the word, aging like a fine wine. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
University Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
A chain of abortion mills in Maine has been bilking the taxpayers for years and finally got caught. The so-called Family Planning Association of Maine has consistently billed abortion-related services to the state's Medicaid program, which is illegal. Pro-life Governor Paul LePage wants the nearly $200,000 back. The abortion chain is suing to avoid repaying the funds. Their defense is they've always done it this way, and since nobody's called them on it, it should be okay. They got used to previous pro-abortion governors looking the other way. The head of the abortion chain said they'd pay the bill if they lost in court, but it'd be a burden. The greater burden is the many babies intentionally killed over the 20 years they've been in business. The same scandal with Planned Parenthood has been faced in many other states.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
1517 The Legacy Project is a coalition of sinner saints like you on a sojourn for the gospel. We tend the narrative of the gospel through a vibrant web presence, a top-shelf publishing house, a world-class speakers bureau, local radio ministry, and an international podcast. We need your support. Check us out at 1517legacy.com. Stand with us.
Our purpose in this world is to be God's witnesses to those around us, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod walks with you in this work. Join us in celebrating gospel proclamation in our cities, on college campuses, in rural areas, and among people of different ethnicities. For more information, visit lcms.org/focus. That's lcms.org/focus.
Thank you.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. In studio with me today, friends from Lutheran Senior Services, Kathy Bell, the creative director there at LSS Living, and Sue Dressel, director of events and donor relations, talking about the upcoming Aging Like a Fine Wine speaker event featuring Dr. Kurt Senske on the phone with us today, talking about his book, Wine and the Word, and the event coming up on January 14th. And we'll share more details about that at the end of the program as well today. So stick around so you can get those details and how to register for the event. Before we went to break, Dr. Senske, we were talking about your experiences of, you know, just relaxing with family and friends, visiting at the wineries, and just what you learned about wine along the way and how you used that as a metaphor for, you know, the Christian life. And in your book, you mentioned these chapters or these stages in the how wine, as it progresses or ages, it has different stages in life, and you compare them to our lives. And I love how you talk about children in chapter 13 in this book. Tell me about those stages of the life of a wine.
Yeah, exactly. So there's kind of a funny stage in wine, right, where a fine wine will often go through what is called a dumb phase. and it's this period where the taste has just very little depth or charm. And the French call it, and I don't know the French word for it, but the difficult age. And so, you know, it's I think something that every parent can relate to, right? Every once in a while, our children seem to go through maybe a dumb phase. And I have a wonderful 20-year-old daughter who probably didn't do that as often as other children, but I can remember a time or two, maybe.
I have a 2-year-old.
you just wait. But I guess from my perspective, the art of making a fine wine, when you think about equating it to rearing children, it's definitely this blend of art and faith and science. And you know what a French winemaker would tell you is that in order to make really good wine, you have to know each vine intimately. You know, you have to know when to maybe baby it or to withhold water from it, when you provide a little bit of stress so that it grows as a vine. Mm-hmm. And then also sometimes, you know, there's hardcore science, and maybe medical would be the nice analogy in raising children. But, you know, very important decisions about fermentation as an example. And so, you know, I think some of the qualities of raising a child is hard work. It's paying attention. It's intentionally being there for that child, and to being a good father or being a good mother, and to oftentimes maybe provide a little bit of stress in their life. Not too much, right? But to help them grow as an individual, to maybe set their sights a little bit higher when they bring home not the perfect grades from grade school or high school. And then, you know, what's also neat, too, is that you know, as a wine age, as a child age, if there's that confluence of faith in the family, if there's the confluence of you know, a good parent or good parents, it's those details of that home environment that really help shape and form a child's character, as well as the wine's character. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the more interesting quotes that I came across in writing this book was from Mother Teresa, and you probably have heard this, but when she was talking about the United States, she said, you know, in reality, your country has a bigger problem than hunger. So many of your children are starved for love and affection. Mm-hmm. And sadly, in the ministry that I do here at Upbring, we see that over and over again, that children are neglected, children are abandoned, children are abused. And it sadly has an impact on a child's life long into their adulthood, if not for their entire adulthood. And so it's the understanding that, you know, much like making a fine wine, it takes a lot of work and attention to detail. If you're going to be a parent, it's going to take just as much work as maybe any effort or energy we put into our professional lives or our own personal lives or whatever's on your plate at that moment.
That's for sure. That it does take a lot of effort and energy. Funny story where I felt like I was in that dumb phase of life it was about this morning, actually. Last night, reading the book at home and enjoying reading it, got called into daddy duty for something. I don't remember what it was. Put the book down. and I don't remember where I laid the book. Well, you know, our son's books are usually strewn about, and then everything gets cleaned up before we go to bed at night. And so this morning, you know, it's dark in our home, and everybody else is still asleep because I get up before the before the sun rises to come in, and I could not find the book. And I said, I need this book for today. We're talking about it on the air. I need to find it. You know, I'm telling myself, I know that I have it around here. I'm looking everywhere, checking my bag where my laptop is, cannot find it. So, you know, I'm looking through my son's books at 5 o'clock in the morning, thinking my son must have picked it up and put it with his books or something, or maybe my wife lovingly picked it up when cleaning up the books, could not find it. And was trying to figure out what I did with it. Finally, I just gave up because I knew I had to come in. I get here. I open up my backpack with my laptop, and it was hidden underneath my laptop.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well,
that's what
that
I felt like.
Dumb face.
So there it was. So I still had the book with me. And I was so grateful because enjoying reading through it and learning from your experience. Now, another interesting topic that you address in this book that I learned about in my wine class, and that is tannins. Tannins, an interesting characteristic, an interesting part of wine that you use the example of, I think, is it grappa?
Yes. Yes. We'll talk about grappa in a moment, although I don't necessarily recommend it. But yeah, tannins are interesting, and especially, for example, in red wine, there's a bitterness to a tannin that if you like, for example, drink a glass of wine and red wine, and your mouth feels a little bit dry or that puckered feeling, mm-hmm. that's the tannin, and so it grips. And you don't want too much, but it can also maybe provide just enough to allow, for example, flavors to express themselves. And so grappa is it's made in Italy, and it's basically clear brandy that's made from that mash of stems and seeds and skins that's left over from winemaking. So if you've ever seen, you know, the stomping of the grapes, you will find that leftover stuff. And
waste not, want not, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you don't make grappa right, it'll actually taste like gasoline. It's simply nasty. But if you do it right, and there are some people that absolutely love it, it has a really smooth, powerful taste. And so, you know, what I talk about is, and it talks about the grippiness of a tannin. So the tannin grips to wine. And so the analogy, and maybe it's a weak analogy, but the analogy that I use is that, you know, God binds himself to us in Holy Spirit in some ways through that grippiness, right? It's the sacrament that transforms us essentially. And so, you know, when I think about grappa, and I've only had it a couple of times, you know, it's in some ways a reminder that of God's promise that, you know, he holds on to me, that, you know, because of through my baptism, I have been baptized to serve for this particular moment. And much like the people who just absolutely love grappa, they have this feverish intensity. And what if we could all incorporate that feverish intensity as we serve whomever God has placed into our path at that particular time of our day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never appreciated tannins until you put it in that perspective.
It's, you know, and I'll tell you maybe my favorite story in the Bible, and it's kind of an analogy of this, is, you know, the stomping of the grapes, right? So back in biblical days, that's how they made their grapes. And, you know, and you think about, it was actually really hard work. And so what we learn is that back in biblical times, what they would do is they would lighten the wine presser's job by making a festive occasion of it. So they'd have a piper to play uplifting mm-hmm. music. They would give the workers frequent breaks, and they'd give them wine of previous harvest. They would tell jokes and riddles, and it actually become almost like a festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so you compare that festive and the collegial picture with the prophetic foretelling of the suffering of Jesus in Gethsemane in Isaiah, where Isaiah talks about how I have trodden the winepress alone. And to me, that gave me a different set of, or sort of image of, you know, unlike that festival-like atmosphere, Jesus is truly left all alone when even his three most trusted companions were fast asleep, when in some ways they were probably needed most. And to me, maybe it's a great description of the true suffering that Jesus went through in the Garden of Gethsemane.
But, you know, that was at a time, the time of a feast.
Yes, right, exactly, right afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, it that's the other fascinating thing to me about how the scribes of the Bible use wine. So, you know, it talks about, for example, the psalmist, a cup of wine signified God's wrath. You've given us wine that makes us stagger. But then to your point, Andy, you need to contrast that with Isaiah 25, right? God's universal summons to this banquet of salvation and what we have to look forward to, right? A feast of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, of aged wine well-refined. I want to go to that banquet.
Yeah. Yeah, finer than any wine that we might find in this world. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You brought
it's interesting, too, that in that one sentence, he talks about fine food full of marrow, right? But he also mentions wine twice. I found that interesting. I don't know what it means.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting in the Passover that there are so many cups of wine that, you know, that each cup represents something in the Passover. I think that's interesting as well. You mentioned suffering, and you include that in your book as well. In one of the later chapters, you talk about suffering. And what does suffering have to do with, what does wine have to do with suffering and the Christian life?
Yeah, and you know, we've some friends of mine were talking about this the other day, and none of us want to suffer, right? And you read the book of Job, and you see the suffering that he went through, and all we can learn from that. But, you know, our life of discipleship, our life of being a Christian, necessarily entails suffering. And what's even more countercultural is that we as Christians are called to embrace our suffering. And, you know, what's always fascinating to me is when I go through those periods of hardship, I always hate it, but afterwards I really truly understand maybe why, how I benefited from that and maybe why that was happening. And you know, we don't certainly have all of the answers this side of heaven, but there's enough answers to understand how beneficial it can be to us. And you know what I've learned through the travels in the wine world and going to different vineyards is how much suffering and hardship can actually improve a good wine as well. So whether it's withholding water so that the vine gets a little bit stressed and so that it becomes stronger is maybe the best analogy. And, you know, by doing that, it allows us as individuals and vines and in the vineyard to produce better fruit, to produce more fruit, and to truly live that Christ-filled and Christ-called life.
Yeah, you know, in viticulture, there is, I mean, pruning is important.
Yeah, now, that's, yeah, absolutely. And we all hate it, right? But we all benefit as a result of it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want healthy vines, if you want a healthy vineyard, you've got to take care of that. Part of that, you know, the part of that work, that viticulture of caring for the vineyard sometimes involves pruning. And there are certainly, well, you know, farmers and anyone who works with agriculture in any way or raising any kind of plants or crops, they're dependent on the weather as well. And there's some suffering certainly with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's also interesting in the Bible is, you know, when there was a drought and there was no good vineyard harvest, that was considered a terrible calamity. And a great harvest on the other side was considered, you know, just a great expression of God's blessings being showered on all of them. And, you know, it was both literal, maybe, and metaphorical. And, you know, the other interesting thing that I find is that, you know, Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine, right? And, you know, we don't know a lot of the details behind that. But, you know, one of the interesting ideas that I've been told that makes some sense to me, at least intuitively, is, you know, just maybe it was a signal by Jesus that an even greater God than the current very popular wine god, the Greek wine god of Bacchus, had arrived. And, you know, who knows if that's true or not, but I like that analogy that, I can come and I can even, you know, turn water into wine. You know, so let's pay attention. I am the true God.
Yeah, he is greater than any inconvenience or suffering we might have. He is greater than that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about children and suffering and the process about, you know, the stages that wine goes through. Is there another aspect of wine that is really key for you in that comparison or in that metaphor for life, for Christian life?
Yeah, you know, one of the ones that I like to talk about is, you know, there's five different ways to judge a wine. One is its varietal character, another is integration, another is complexity. But the one I like to talk about is varietal character. So what that means is if a wine has a very distinct varietal character, it presents its inherent grape aromas in a very straightforward or clear or focused way, right? So, for example, could be a Chardonnay or it could be a Cabernet. So sometimes Cabernets are described, if they're good, as maybe having a licorice taste or a plum taste or a cherry taste or maybe a cigar box aroma, or a Chardonnay might be considered to have a buttery taste. The best descriptor that I've ever seen of a Chardonnay is that it tastes like the curves of Marilyn Monroe. I have no idea what that means, but I want to try that wine, right? But there are also bad descriptors of wine. So if a wine's not good, I've seen a wine described as old running shoes or dog breath. You know, you're probably not going to want to try that wine. And so, you know, the analogy that I make is, you know, how would our spouse or our children or our neighbors or coworkers describe our varietal character? You know, would our neighbors maybe note this pleasing aroma of a face of action, or does a coworker actually even know we're Christian by our actions or deeds? And, you know, or maybe our spouse or children maybe see a short temper or describe us in that way. And, you know, when we're completely honest with ourselves, right, these can be very uncomfortable questions because of sin, we're never going to enjoy that perfect varietal character. But, you know, what I like to talk about is because we are forgiven, because we're Christian, every day is this opportunity to improve. And because we're forgiven, we do get to be clothed with the varietal character, the fruits of the Spirit, right? The love, the peace, the patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And, you know, as Christians, those should be our descriptors of varietal character.
Mm-hmm. Rather than, oh, he has a lot of tannins.
Yeah, that's good. I should have used that in my book.
Well, I certainly want to hear from everybody in the room, your and with from you, Kurt, as well. What is your favorite wine on that list of wines? I'm gathering from your experience and all your research, there might be a few, but what is your absolute favorite, Kurt?
You know, so right now I'm enjoying wines from Southern Rhone. And they're typically a Syrah grape, and they have just a little bit of a peppery taste that keeps me wanting to come back for more.
I like how he qualified that, right now.
Well, life is, you know, you still have to learn, and there's a lot more wine to try, Andy.
I have tried a Syrah before when I was taking the wine class, and I don't remember if it had a peppery taste or not, though. Yeah.
And did you say that one was from France?
Yes, the Southern Rhone area, which is kind of by Avignon and just north of that, Chateauneuf de Pape, I think is how you say it.
Very good, very good. All right, so a Syrah from France, from the Avignon area.
Yes.
All right, Kathy, what's your favorite?
Well, my newest favorite is called Edge, and it's actually a Napa Valley wine. And it's really rich and has a wonderful plum finish.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Is this a white or red? Do you know what grapes?
It's red. Yeah, it's a Cabernet.
Mm.
Sounds good.
It is.
Sue, do you have a favorite?
I do. I'm actually past my Merlot and Cabs and onto Malbecs. And I'm just in love with, I believe they are of Chilean origin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. You both, Sue and Kathy, would love hanging out with my wife, Lori, because those are her two favorite.
Oh, cool. Good.
So we have all reds, all red favorites, it sounds like.
And yours, Andy?
Well, if I'm going to go with a grape wine, then it's most likely going to be either it's a Riesling or a Pinot.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Riesling's good.
I love Riesling. Mm-hmm. Now, there's the one that I can't pronounce.
Gewurztraminer?
That's it. Australian or German? I can't remember where.
I believe that's typically German.
German, yeah, I think it is.
I can't pronounce it, but I like it, but it's very sweet. Mm-hmm. It's extremely sweet. And I tend to like the white wines more than the red wines because of the tannins. I just don't like the tannins.
Red seems to be more of an acquired taste.
It is, mm-hmm. I think.
Because I know when I started drinking wine, it was the white wines. But as you gradually learn to appreciate, mm-hmm. you definitely start going towards the red wines.
And so that's probably kind of, if we could use your metaphors here, Kurt, there are things that we don't appreciate much in younger life. But as we age like a fine wine, there are things that we do appreciate more so as we learn more about them or as we grow in our years.
No, absolutely. And just maybe the only caveat is to remember the doctor's advice that men should limit to one or two a day and women to one a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not fair.
Right?
Well, I think I got you beat. Maybe one a year, one a month. I don't know. Well, what a unique topic, and I appreciate the book, and glad that everybody who's attending will get a copy of it, and certainly get to hear Kurt speaking on this. The details again about the event, we can register online. What was the website for that again?
It is Engaging in Life, and I'd like to come back to that because okay. there's a good story behind that. Engaginginlife.eventbrite.com.
And Eventbrite, the Bright is BRITE, right?
That is correct.
So engaginginlife.eventbrite.com.
That's correct.
And you can find information there to register for the upcoming event. It is a week from tomorrow, so Thursday, January 14th.
That is correct.
And what's the time on that again?
6 to 8:30.
6 to 8:30 at Concordia Lutheran Church, Kirkwood, Missouri, just, not even 2 miles up the road here from the studios. And again, we'll be hearing Dr. Kurt Senske speak. Mm-hmm. And a copy of the book, and there's a wine and cheese tasting as well.
Yep, that's correct, following the event.
Now, we didn't talk about cheese at all. We've been talking about wine the whole time. Mm-hmm. Kurt, what do you like, what do you enjoy with wine the most?
Well, you know, what's interesting about cheese is it actually enhances the wine flavor. So mm-hmm. If you would go to a restaurant and they offer you cheese with the wine, it may be an indication they're not serving you great wine. a little trick I learned. But, you know, any sort, in our family anyway, of soft cheese. So we're fans of the goat cheese and some other just different varieties. Mm-hmm. I just think it's an amazing pairing to have a glass of wine and a plate full of artisanal cheese.
All right. Did you all hear that? He likes goat cheese with his wine.
I will make certain it's there.
I am a fan of goat cheese as well. Definitely. Well, it sounds like a fun event. Good times for everyone to come visit. Learn a little bit about LSS as well. LSSliving.org. You can find out more. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow morning too, when Kathy Lee and Hoda come back to visit
with our wine.
Right.
Well, Kurt, I hope that you have a safe trip coming back to St. Louis next week to come up and speak at the event. And blessings on your work there at Upbring Lutheran Social Services of the South. You all are doing great work there for kids, and glad that we get to steal you away for a little bit to come up here and talk about aging like a fine wine.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure, Andy, and I'm truly looking forward to seeing everyone next Thursday evening at Concordia Lutheran Church. So
absolutely.
Appreciate the offer and opportunity from Lutheran Senior Services.
Thank you. God's blessings.
Likewise.
Thank you, Kurt.
All right, so the website, engaginginlife.eventbrite.com.
That's correct. And I sort of wanted to go back to that engaging in life. Mm-hmm. Our dear friend Jane Wilkie mm-hmm. is actually the one who came up with this concept. And it's not so much the aging in life, but actually engaging in life. And I think it's so perfect for this kickoff event that we're very, very excited about and really would like to get people to come out and listen to what Kurt has to say. I think just listening to him this past hour, he's certainly perfect for our first event, and we are very excited about it.
Absolutely. You mentioned our good friend Jane. It's too bad she couldn't be here, but she had to be on vacation this week. So, Kathy Bell, LSS Creative Director, thanks for being my guest today. It was fun to have you in studio.
You. It was really fun.
And Sue Dressel, thanks for being my guest today, LSS Director of Events and Donor Relations.
Thank you so much for having us. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Our guest, Dr. Kurt Senske, it was great to talk with him. I know you all are going to host a great event next week. And well, God's blessings on the event, and look forward to talking with you more in the future. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, right here on Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.